Hello and welcome back to Three Levels Deep, where today we are hell diving straight first into what we've been playing.
Yeah, this is not just a podcast. This is a super podcast.
I'm Matt, and today I'm joined by Santo.
Hello, hello.
So, where should we? There's a couple things that both of us have played. Do we kind of want to just start there?
Yeah, for once, we've been playing, you know, similar games on the podcast.
Yeah. One, I think I have more time in than you, and the other, you have more time in than me.
Yeah. So it balances out.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think we should just dive into it with Helldivers 2.
All right.
That's, you know, one of the big recent releases.
Yeah, suffering from success.
Yeah, servers had some issues for the first few days.
But it's all good now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for, I think, when the mechs came out, I think the requisition system went down.
Oh.
So you couldn't actually purchase to unlock the mechs. So they just made it, everyone could call it in missions for, I don't know if it's still ongoing or if they've ended that now, but... the mechs are at, like, level 25, though, so I gotta grind out to get that unlock.
Oh, boy, yeah.
But, yeah, no, Helldivers. I'm having a lot of fun with this game.
I'm having less fun with this game. It's got some mechanics that I'm not a big fan of. We'll get into them, but...
I understand that. And, like, I have my own issues with them, but... So it's a 4-player co-op game where essentially you're basically ODSTs from Halo, but you're trying to defend Super Earth and spread democracy, manage democracy across the galaxy, fighting bugs and robots.
Yeah, that's one of the best things about the game to me is the tone of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the tutorial is hilarious. All of this just, like, random crap that your characters are yelling.
All the loading screen tips.
Yeah, it's all, like, really funny. And it's, like, yelling at some space bugs. It's like, that's the taste of democracy when you blow them up. Like, that's just stupid. it's reveling in its stupidity, and it's really great. It's super.
And you just add super to everything. Super Earth. Super SSD.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, yeah, no, why don't we get into the, issues you've got with it? I know one of them is one that I've got a bit of an issue with because it's a more of a personal thing, but I can look past it for this, and that's that when you reload, you're wasting all the ammo in the magazine. That you have
left. I hate that in games. It's like, I get that it's more realistic, but games aren't supposed to be about realism for me. I understand that and the other mechanic that I don't like about the game. Like, I understand them being in the game, and I think they actually do make a lot of sense for the game. Because this is kind of a game where you're moving around a map, trying to complete objectives, and then extract. And so there's, like, different points on the map where you can get more ammo. You can call down, like, heavy weapons on a timer. So you basically have to, you know, manage your resources as you're playing the game. Like, your ammo, your grenades, your call downs, and your time.
Your respawns.
Your respawns, yeah. Which, that's hilarious to me. That, like, with a 4-person... squad, you get 20 respawns,
yep,
which is quite a lot, and we have run out of them in a couple of missions that we played.
Oh, yeah. Especially so, up there when we got to hard.
I think we were like one level above hard, challenging or something.
No, challenging is right before hard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think we were one above hard.
Where are we?
But I don't know. Maybe not.
When I play again with randoms online, I haven't gone above challenging. I don't wanna go higher than that with randoms.
Same. I've only played a couple matches with randoms, and I did the same thing where I played it on, like, the level before hard. And that's not something that I necessarily want to do in this game. I don't necessarily want to play it with only random other people.
Yeah.
Because it's... If there were a few parts of the game that were less about communication, I might. But there's a couple objectives that require, you know, like voice chat, basically.
Yeah, like there's one where you have to align a radar dish in the right, like at the right angle, and that one requires communication between two people.
Yeah, and like, you know, like some stuff doesn't necessarily require you to use voice chat. Like there's doors that you can only open with two people to get like a cache of items, and like those generally, like I was able to, you know, recognize that somebody else was doing that pretty easily. Even when playing with no voice chat. But yeah, it's definitely a game that I'd rather play with friends. Even like you know, one friend and two randoms, I'm fine with that. But
yeah,
pure random,
as long as you've got one other person to communicate with.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing a match, like, it was my session, bunch of people join on me, and I'm just, like, pinging, okay, I'm heading over here, and then they all go off on their own way together as a group, and I'm just all on my own, trying to do what I wanted. I'm hosting this mission.
Yeah. The glory of, people online. Because, like, the game's kind of interesting in that it's... You do have to extract at some point, and there is a time limit.
Yep.
So the question kind of becomes, how much stuff do you want to do in the mission? And some people are just going to have different thoughts on that. Some people are going to want to just like complete the main objective and extract and start playing another mission as fast as possible. Whereas when we were playing, we were trying to, you know, do all the optional objectives, clear out all the enemy encampments before we extracted, like do everything in the mission before we go. So... It could be a little tricky balancing that.
And it does give you extra experience and money to purchase stuff by doing those side objectives. So if you've got the time, you might as well do as many as you can.
So one mechanic that I think is really fun are the cooldowns. You basically have a set of commands on a cooldown. Some of them are limited uses as well, where you can call down heavy weapons, airstrikes, equipment, stuff
turrets.
Like that. Yep. And this is also the system you use to respawn your allies. And it's really funny because you have to, like, at least for a controller, I'm assuming it's a similar thing on PC, you have to hold in one of the triggers and then press directions on the directional pad specifically for your separate cooldown. So you kind of have to, like, memorize them. I know you were saying that you couldn't tell me what the specific directions were for one of them, but just muscle memory at that point.
Like do, do, yeah, do, do, do. It was for the respawn. Like it's just muscle memory at this point now.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting way, because one, it allows you to have a lot of different things that you can do on a controller. Because at this point, if you're making a shooter on PC, most people are supporting controllers at this point. So the design of the game kind of, you know, has to match that.
And actually, like, even this game, like playing for mouse and keyboard, this game has very good customization that I haven't seen in other games.
Yeah, like the context sensitive things that you can do with your controls are really, really good.
Yeah, like you can have, I think there's like six different options. You could potentially have six different things tied to one keybind. It's just a matter of like whether it's hold, a long press, a double press, a single press. Like I've got crouch as press control. I've got prone as double tap control. I've got prone as hold control, and at the moment I have dive as double tap control, but I'm thinking of moving that to space instead. Because I don't really, unless you have, at least from what I've played so far, unless you have the jetpack, there's not really anything on space on the keyboard from my settings, so I might as well use space for diving.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and speaking of somebody who has to program keybinds for software, like, it's so nice that this game has, you know, the ability to do double taps and holding buttons for our stuff. It's just like, are you holding control? Are you holding alt? Or are you holding both? And it's unfortunate because we're kind of actually running out of keybinds. It's too many features in the program, too many windows. something else I want to bring down, talk about the call downs, is one thing that I love about the input system is that it kind of reinforces what I think is this game's like prime directive, which is chaos. Like having to, you know, hold a button and then put in like a 4 to 7 sequence directional thing. Like,
yeah, and you got to stop moving to do it too.
Yeah,
at least on keyboard, anyways. I don't know about controller.
I forget. I think you might be able to move around just slowly. But okay, like, because you can't like dive while doing it, I don't think.
Yeah, because at least on keyboard, the directional inputs for the call downs are the movement keys, so can't really move around while also calling something down.
Oh, well, I have the luck of having the directional pad.
Yeah.
And analog stick is different, so a bit odd. Yeah, and the thing about some of those call downs, though, is that some of them, you know, are big airstrikes and big, like, strafing runs or something, which ties into the other mechanic that I completely understand for the game, but I'm not a fan of, which is full friendly fire.
Yep.
Everything can friendly fire. To the point where, like, even, like, the in-game descriptions of, like, the sentry turrets that you can put down specifically say, it's got friendly fire, buddy. Don't stand in front of this.
Yep. And you might not even be standing in front of it, and then it turns, and then you're in front of it without even being aware of it.
Yep.
And in fact, actually, with the mech, I had something happen to me that I wasn't sure what happened until I heard about this later. I don't know if this is a bug, but when you're turning the mech to the right, so you've got on the left of the mech, you've got like the Gatling gun, and on the right, you've got missile pods, or on the left, you have missile pods. So when you start turning to the right, if you fire a missile, I think the missile kind of just spawns in the direction you're facing from the pod, and it ends up hitting the main body and blowing you up.
Oh my god, that's fantastic.
So I feel like this is a bug, but as it is right now, I kind of like to accept it as, oh yeah, no, Super Earth contracted the lowest bidder for these mechs.
Yeah, that's honestly fitting with the spirit of the game. I think it's good for what it is. It's not like it's a full price $80 game.
Oh yeah.
Or anything like that.
Which is nice to see. We're seeing a lot of these lower price games that are just blowing up and kind of just putting the AAA industry to shame.
Yeah. Because like a game that's cheaper, like, is going to be more widely accessible, not just for, you know, people in North America, but in other parts of the world where game prices can be like really crazy.
I mean, we're getting there in Canada now.
Yeah,
let's get in there. It's still no Australia.
No. Have you done any missions against the robots yet?
One or two. I was more so waiting until I unlocked the assault rifle, which I do have it now. I haven't used it against them yet, but the assault rifle that has medium armor penetration.
Right. Okay. That makes sense, considering, you know, robots.
Yep. I figured out... So when we were playing last, remember how those chargers were just absolutely demolishing us?
Yep.
I figured out what you're supposed to do against them. You want to shoot for their front legs.
Oh, not okay.
I kept shooting for the back thinking it was soft. No, you want to go for their legs to blow the armor off, and then the leg becomes a weak point.
The back is definitely softer. There's an indicator, like a hit indicator, whether or not you're hitting armor on an enemy or not, and that wasn't popping up when I was shooting at them in the back. Okay. But
yeah, no, but the leg is definitely more efficient though.
Yeah, that makes sense, because some enemies do have like dismemberment kind of stuff where you can blow off their armor and stuff like that, so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, for anyone who's struggling with chargers, now you know.
We start talking about chargers, and then my headset gives me the low battery beep.
Oh,
it's like, oh, gotta charge it now.
Yeah, I've been dealing with a new headset myself here. It's an updated model of the one I had before. It doesn't hold as much of a charge, and it does a bunch of weird things. I don't like it as much, but the wireless transmitter has an aux in for my consoles from the monitor, so it's what works for my setup.
Okay, I think I'm pretty much done talking about health divers. You got anything else?
No, I think that about covers it. Just a fun 4-player co-op game. Decently priced. That completely blew up. Apparently this thing, it had been shown off in PlayStation, I want to call them Directs. They essentially are. They'd shown it off in the PlayStation Directs for a while. And I had heard no one talk about it until it came out.
Yeah, like it's, again, one of those games that just like completely blew up. Like I've seen gameplay of the first Helldivers, which was more like of an isometric
kind
of shooter thingy. And that looked, you know, fairly similar mechanics, just in a different perspective. But I don't know. Something about behind the back, third person, a lot higher fidelity.
Oh, actually, that is one other thing I want to say. The game also has a lot of customization for when you aim down sights. Because, like, each gun, like, you can have three different levels of magnification. Like, the starting gun, you can set whether it's full auto, which full auto by default, semi-auto, or burst. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, so there's just, and you can even set, like, what kind of scope I think you have, whether it's just, like, a red dot or more of, like, a magnet, not magnetized.
Magnification.
More of a magnification scope. Like there's a lot of nice customization there, and it seems to save it from gun to gun for your preference. You just need to hold down reload, and you get a menu that comes up that allows you to customize it.
Yeah, that's good. Always love to see options like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess. So I guess the next thing we've both been playing, you, I think you have about 4 times as much time in it as I do. I've got 5 hours. I think you've got about 20.
27, but
sure. Okay. And that's Blaze Blue Entropy Effect.
Just going to get this out of the way right now. Not a Blaze Blue game.
I'm just going to call it Entropy Effect.
Yeah, it's so weird, man. Like, the game it reminds me of most is Star Fox Adventures, just for the fact that Star Fox Adventures was a completely different game during most of its development, and they just added Star Fox at the end and made it a GameCube game instead of an N64 game sell it more.
And that's the thing. That's what it feels like, but I don't think that's how it was developed.
I didn't pay attention to its development cycle because it went through early access. I only played it after it was full release, so I have no idea. Seems like it's developed by like Act 91, who I believe is a Chinese developer.
I believe so, yeah.
And that makes sense for a couple things in the game. The voice options. Like, there's voice options for English, Japanese, and Chinese. For the, like, outside of battle hub world characters and stuff like that. But in battles, there's only Japanese voice acting for the BlazBlue characters.
Yeah. Which I feel like they just took existing voice lines that they had from the BlazBlue games already for them. I don't know that it's anything new. And well, apparently in when it was in early access, I guess they must have fixed this for the full release, but I'd heard that for some reason, or I guess they didn't have the full voices yet, so in early access, like, everything out of the game was just in Chinese and subtitled. There was no English voice language yet at that time.
Yeah, but it's weird that this game was in early access and it came out, yet still seems like it's in early access a little bit, because they keep making mechanical changes to the game, which some of them are actually fairly significant. Like, when the game came out, this was actually a game that I was very rarely going to play on release day. But then I saw, like, a big list of changes and was a little bit busy that weekend. And there were just more changes, like, the next few days. It's like, okay, these seem, like, significant. I'm going to hold off for a week just to let the game settle. Did that. But then they changed a bunch more stuff. Like, at the start, there is a new game plus. But your, like, collection progress for the tactics, which are your, like, buffs that you get to your character in-game, that didn't carry over initially. So when I did it, like, I lost all my collection progress there, which only really matters for achievements. And I don't care about those, so it's not a big deal. But
it does carry over now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they revamped the, like, adaptive... Not adaptive... Like, there's a difficulty system where you can choose different modifiers that make the game more difficult, but you get more rewards and get other perks during the run. They completely revamped that, like, 4 days ago or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, it's very strange. And they've also announced that there's another character coming as a free update at some point, but they haven't...
Okay, yeah, because, like... I haven't unlocked every character yet, but there's definitely some, like, key BlazBlue characters that are kind of missing from there.
Yeah, it's difficult what you do when you only have a cast of 8 characters, something like this, for example. Half the characters are from the first BlazBlue game. Now, maybe not the... Well... Actually, thinking about it, that might have been the half that I would have chosen. Maybe I would have swapped... No. I was going to say swap Tager for Hakumen, but Tager, I don't think, would work much in the... Like, having a grappler and kind of like an action roguelike flashy game that requires speed is maybe a bit different, whereas having a character with a gigantic sword that hits like a truck, a little bit... Maybe that fits a little bit more.
Yeah, and of... While we're on the characters, I don't know how you felt, but I feel like some of the characters are very underpowered. Either that or, like, I'm not utilizing them right.
The game has it has some meta progression where you upgrade how much max HP you start with, as well as adding different buffs. And it takes a little bit for you to get, like, those different buffs sorted, like the mind upgrades or whatever, the gems that you put in. You can put 6 of them and then upgrade them three different tiers, and those can make a pretty big difference. For example, like, one of them is you get extra, like, HP potions during the run, and if you have that fully upgraded, you start with 4 instead of 1, which is pretty significant. So some of those can definitely help you out a lot. But there's a couple characters that I think are underpowered until you get a specific, like, feature for them. Because one of the main systems in this game is that you collect things called potentials during the run, and that unlocks different aspects of your character.
It gives your characters more that they can do.
Yeah, more abilities or modifiers on their current abilities. And some of them are just plain, feels like they're better than others, or, like, core to how the character plays. Like,
yeah.
Like, every character can get ones that are like actually, you start with a double jump, but a triple jump or a triple dash. Like, those are nice, but, and they'll help you, you know, evade things, but they're not going to help your damage output much, other than the fact that every potential you get does raise your damage output a little bit. But for others, like...
The one that stands out to me, though, is Lambda 11. Like, even after getting some potentials, like, I felt like I was doing nothing with her still. Like, no damage. Yeah,
she's really difficult and kind of needs to pair her with certain effects to really make her go off. Like, I have had a couple runs where I was just filling the screen with crap. And it was just, like, easy peasy. But other times, especially on some of the harder difficulties with just increased enemy HP, it felt like I was taking forever to clear out simple mobs. So, and they actually address that. Like, they have tutorial videos for each of the characters, and for her, they specifically say, like, her damage output starts off low, but once you ramp up with potentials, it gets better, which is true, but I don't necessarily think I would have designed her that way, personally.
Yeah. And then, like, Ragna with, like...
Ragna's the hardest character to use. Easily.
It sure seems like it, because, like, how much health his skill moves take. And then the return you get back on them, at least initially, does not feel like it's worth it.
Like, it scales based on how much HP you have left. Like, if you're at fairly low HP, it is a net positive, but if you're at, like, high HP, it's a net negative, it feels like. And I haven't played Ragna all that much because I just don't like playing him. I don't like having to manage that. Because if you miss enemies, you just lost all of that health for nothing. So maybe I'm thinking, like, maybe you have to hit multiple enemies with the skills or something like that. I'm not really sure. But, I mean, a lot of the characters do feel quite nice. And that's the thing that I like the most about this game, is just how it feels. Like, I am bad at fighting games. I love fighting games, but I'm so bad at them. I can't execute worth a damn. I refunded Street Fighter 6 because I was trying to do a very simple sounding 3-hit combo, and I just couldn't do it. Like, I tried for 45 minutes and decided, okay, I'm still under the threshold to refund this on Steam. I'm gonna do it because, like, I just can't. But this game, like, you can straight up mash out stuff. Like, it's very fluid, and it doesn't punish you for treating it like an action game instead of a fighting game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it, like, has, like, very fighting game combos where your, like, character's moving around a bunch, and it just feels like you're... Like, I hate using the words, like, power fantasy when it comes to video games, but it feels like you're very powerful doing this. It's very fun that way.
Yeah, and so one thing I like about this game that took me a little bit to realize what exactly was going on was what happens. So when you start a new run, you can select characters from your previous run, and I was like, what is this doing? And it took me to realize that you get two extra moves based, like, big special moves based on who you choose, but then you also can inherit some perks that they had picked up from the runs you did with them, and I think that's a pretty neat system.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, yeah, you pick up something called Legacy Skill, which is just an extra ability that you can do. You pick up a trait from the character, for example, like Noelle deals extra damage to far-off enemies and stuff like that. And then, yeah, you pick up two tactics, which are one of the things that you pick up during the run that's, you know, random, and there's different tactic trees, like, for, you know, like, fire, ice, lightning, poison, like, all of the very fairly standard stuff there. But the abilities that they give, like, are interesting and fun to use, and, yeah, it... Like, I've done runs where I've specifically, like, tried to focus in a specific direction to try and get specific tactics to use on later runs to kind of, like, be able to mix and match characters really effectively. But one thing that you gotta be careful with is that a character can't inherit from themselves.
Yeah.
And you can't inherit they're called evo types from the same characters, so... Like, I have one really, I think there's one ability in the game that is actually broken, and that I use to get through some of the harder difficulties. Because I use that on one character, that means that I actually was struggling beating the game with that character, because I couldn't just rely on the very, very cheesy stuff. And at some point I just decided I'm not even going to use this anymore, because it's like taking a little bit of the fun out of the game, because it was making things too easy.
I also really like that, I forget what it's called, but it's like those little like additional challenges you can do where you select one of your previous characters from your previous runs to do the challenge, and then they're locked out from doing any more of those challenges.
Yeah, the mind training. yeah, it's like it's like a boss fight mode, and you're using exactly the characters that you used previously, which usually I try to, you know, finish the run and then go do one of those, so it's the character still fresh in my mind. But they actually changed that a bit, because how it used to work was you pick a character, do the run, win or lose, you can't use that character again. But now they've made it so that you can use characters that you haven't locked out on ones that you've already completed, and not have them get locked out, because there are there is a little bit of reward for that, and also it does let you, you know, kind of practice fighting these bosses, because the bosses are really like the hard parts of the game. I didn't find the stages that bad outside of a couple specific kinds of enemies.
Yeah, it's pretty, and like there's not really too much variety in the enemies, like as you're going through each of the stages. Like,
yeah, it's pretty much dealing 4 to 6 different types of enemies, and they're fairly similar.
That is one of my, I'd say one of the flaws with the game is I feel like there should be a little more level variety, like maybe some branching areas, just to change it up a bit, so you're not going through those same areas on every run.
Yeah, I can see that. Like the biggest problem with the game for me, is just it gets repetitive. Okay, here's the thing. It gets repetitive fairly quickly, but at the same time, this was a very cheap game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was 20-something bucks for us in Canada, so it's probably like 20 bucks US or something.
Like 15, maybe? Like 15 to 20, somewhere there.
Given our exchange rate. So, like, me saying, like, oh, you know, it's kind of repetitive, and I, you know, I'm feeling like I don't really want to go play it all that much now. I still got 20 something hours out of it, so that's still a very good return on my money in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And the time that I was playing it was quite fun, so I get the criticism that it's repetitive. I think that, but it's not nearly as bad as it would be if this was a more expensive game.
Yeah. No, I think any game where you can get your return down to basically $1 or less per hour you've played is worthwhile.
Yeah, I was talking with a friend of ours about this, and it's just like, gaming is actually a very cost-effective hobby.
It's more cost-effective than going to a movie.
By a very large margin. Yeah. The story stuff in this game, the stuff that's just, like, not Blaze Blue at all, it's doled out, kind of like you just get these, like, kind of fragments of the story as you play, as you do runs.
Yeah, and you're just trying to piece together and just slowly figure out what's going on with this world.
Yeah, and the story cutscenes are portrayed in a really interesting style, actually, where everything's made up of little dots. But it still looks like, you know, a 3D environment and stuff like that. So it's a very striking visual presentation for a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
A bunch of very vague stuff with bad subtitles. That's actually one of the big problems with this game, is that the translation's not very good. And this is something that I've noticed a lot from games from Chinese developers, unfortunately, is that the translations are not great. I get that, like, Chinese is a very difficult language. So
to translate from or to.
Yeah. So there's like a decent amount of the patches just like optimizing description of blank, where they just like basically like fix the translation to make things less vague, or just like just bad grammar and stuff like that.
I mean, I think it works fine for that one thing you talk to pretty regularly to see those cutscenes, which is intentionally very vague.
Yeah, and like a lot of the prompts that your character has are kind of funny.
Very very snarky.
Yeah. On your little robot guy. Yeah, because it's basically just like a robot city, because it's like post-apocalypse. There's some weird particles that drive people crazy or something like that.
Yep.
Again, very vague. I haven't seen all the story fragments. I haven't seen the true ending, and I've actually looked up the requirements for the true ending, and I'm not sure if I can get it. It's like I completed the story the first time, and then it pops up a thing saying like, "Grassy, you complete the story. You can't collect any more of those story fragments, but you can still play the game." So if you want to, you know, see more of the story, you got New Game Plus. I'm like, okay, fine, New Game Plus. It's not like the like progression aspects of the game are that bad.
Yeah, I feel like it certainly wouldn't be. Like, even if you just started from a new file, I feel like it's not that bad, at least from what I've played so far.
Well, the thing is, it's like the progression, like, oh, you know, the tutorialization isn't that bad. Like, you get to the point where you've unlocked everything that you can do pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But you still have to unlock all those story bits again on New Game Plus.
Right. And I guess all of, I forget what they're called, but they're those modifiers you can equip outside of runs to
those carry some over.
Advantages. Those carry over,
and your like level that determines how much extra max HP you start with. That carries over. All your currency carries over.
Okay.
The fact that you've unlocked all the characters carries over. So like all the gameplay stuff carries over pretty much, but none of the story stuff, which is unfortunate because I New Game Plus, play through, got a bunch of these fragments. Check the requirements for the true ending, and I'm still not sure if I can get it, because the like one guide is a little bit vague on a certain point.
I think I might have seen the guide you were talking about.
Yeah, where so it's like, oh, after you do this story quest, you get an option to determine like something that happens. I didn't get that option, maybe because I went through the like story quest progression faster than the story, you know, plot progression that you see in this like side room. And I've done a few runs at this point, and I'm not getting any of the story fragments that drop, because and those are very like, it doesn't really say how you really unlock those. For me, it seemed like if you just, like, you know, complete an area with each character, like, you'll get one. But I'm not getting any more, and it feels like I've gotten to at least the final bit with every character. So I don't know if there's some characters I need to beat it with to get those specific fragments or what. Maybe there's a better guide that's out now. I don't know. But one of the things is that, like, to unlock the true ending, you do need to say specific things in specific conversations as well. And yeah, on my second playthrough, I was literally matching through every single story conversation, so I don't even know what dialogue choices I chose. So if I want to see the true ending, I might have to either do Game Plus again, or see if maybe there's some console commands or something that I can do to see it, or just watch it on YouTube or something. I'm not particularly invested in the story anyways, so whatever. I'm not too bummed out about that, but it's not the best system that they chose, unfortunately. One thing that I'd love to talk about but haven't been able to do is the multiplayer.
But there's multiplayer?
There's multiplayer.
I didn't know.
In the top area on the far on the left is the lobby for it, and it's PvPvE. where I guess you're going around doing stages collecting resources, and then the person that extracts with the most resources wins. Or if you die, then you lose. So I tried getting into a lobby a couple times. One time I was in a lobby for like 10 minutes, nobody else joined. Another time I was in the lobby for like 10 minutes and like two other people joined, but it's like a 12-person lobby or something like that, maybe more. So I feel like maybe, because like the player base for this game, I'm guessing, is largely in Japan and China, given like comments on like their patches and stuff like that. A lot of them are in Chinese, and BlazBlue, you know, is a Japanese franchise, so it's possible that it's like a time zone thing where I gotta try a different time to get in. But
according to Steam charts, there's like 3,170 people playing right now.
Yeah, apparently, so
the all-time peak is only about 6,904.
Yeah, maybe they were a bit ambitious with the how the they decided to design the multiplayer mode. But there's like a solo mode and a duos mode. So, and like a bunch of modifiers that you can put on your characters. And they also are like adaptively balancing characters based on their performance so that they don't start off with the same HP and damage that they deal. So like, right now I think like Ragna has like much higher stats than everybody else just because his playstyle is not really conducive to the game, with like having to drain your HP to do your skills, and that's not that's not optional. That's a thing that you have to do. So like, it seems like it might be interesting, but I can't actually do it. So we'll have to see. Like, maybe in the future they'll either implement bots or something, or
I feel like it could just be a mode that a lot of people are just kind of ignoring.
Yeah, you didn't even know it was in the game, so that's possible. Yeah, have you beaten the final boss in a run yet?
No, I have gotten to what I believe is the final area, though.
Yeah, well, Space Omega. Then, the final area is pretty obvious that's the final area.
Yeah. And then, like, I'm exploring the area, and I find this one area that's, like, looks like this is the way to go. I'm going to finish exploring the rest of it. And then I go to this thing, and it just teleported me to another boss that I was not ready for. I was not expecting.
Yeah, the way that that works is that there's, like, a small HP boost, a small MP boost, two bosses that some of them are ones you fight during the stages. And there's like, I think two that are exclusive to that area. And then
Think I encounter an exclusive one.
Yeah, and then there's the final boss, which is like a big pillar thingy. And so, this might be a weird translation thing, but after beating the two other the two other bosses before the actual final boss, you get a pop-up saying, like, you've defeated these enemies, now you can fight the final boss. But I've gone to the final boss directly and still been able to fight it. So I think that might just be a mistranslation. That's like, instead of like, now you can go fight the final boss, it's like, there's nothing else to do, go fight the final boss. More like, it's not like you're unlocking it, it's just that now this is what you should do.
Yeah.
The final boss is a huge pain in the ass. It's like big difficulty spike. It took me a lot of runs to finally be able to beat it. Until I basically just like, who did I beat it with first? I think I might have beaten it first with Noelle, because I had like triple jump and the ability to like reset my combos in the air after jumping and dashing, and like an attack that let me basically stay in the air a long time. So I was just like, okay, I'm just gonna like stay away from you to be able to actually beat you, because he'd pretty difficult. Yeah, I think that's about it for me on the game.
Yeah, so yeah, that's Entropy Effect featuring characters from BlazBlue.
Yep. Featuring Ragna from the BlazBlue series.
And I guess while we're on the BlazBlue topic, so one thing I did a while back was I talked about I bought a Japanese points or eShop card so I could buy Suika game before it came out in North America, which came out real quickly after I had bought it. And I had some leftover funds on my Japanese PSN account, or PSN, Nintendo eShop account. So I ended up picking up two games, just two cheap games, just browsing what was on sale, that had English support in them, or had English language in it. And one is, the first one is Eat Beat Dead Spike Son, which is a Blaze Blue rhythm game.
Yeah. Dead Spike is one of Ragnar's special moves.
Unfortunately, this game is very basic. It's not all that great. There's like no kind of progression system or anything from what I could tell. No unlocking of more songs. And it just has a very small library of songs to choose from, which is very disappointing when you look at just how much music Blaze Blue has.
Yeah, I guess. It's a bit unfortunate. Actually, here's a question. So, they announced that they're going to add one more character for free to Entropy Effect. Given how the game's done, I have no idea if they're going to add more. Who would you like to see in the game?
Oh, I mean, I have to say my main. I have to say Platinum the Trinity.
Yeah, I can see Platinum being fun because she's got a lot of like unorthodox moves.
Yeah,
like,
I love her weird shit.
Yeah,
even in Guilty Gear, I gravitate towards the weird character. Like I played Jacko in Exord. I just love throwing down her little minion houses and just having those guys just go and attack the enemy and self destructing them. I don't very much care for how she plays in the latest version. Why
Strive?
Strive, yeah. I'm not really a big fan of how Jacko plays in Strive. But I like weird characters in fighting games sometimes.
Yeah. Like my main for Blaze Blue was Izayoi, who could be interesting, but they would have to implement her mechanic where she basically had two modes, where in one mode she's kind of like, if you hit with certain attacks, you build up a meter that you can spend in a different mode to use like special attacks. I'm not sure how well that would translate. That's the thing, is that like every character in Blaze Blue seems to have their own personal meter and just like their own personal kind of mechanic that goes on with them, that, you know, it's kind of telling that Street Fighters decide to add all those, you know, V-triggers and VFX or whatever. It's like kind of the same thing.
Actually, you know who I'd want to see more than Platinum?
Yeah.
I want to see Hazama.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that could be fun because it's chains.
Yeah.
Just like with zipping around. Though I will say, the first character I tried was Mai, and I had a lot of trouble with her because I just kept like running into enemies and like traveling too far with my attacks. I didn't want to because there's like certain like traps in the stage and stuff like that, and like damage walls that I kept accidentally running into.
Yeah, so for me, I think my was the second character I tried. First was Noelle.
Yeah, like I think the character that I would want would be Izayoi with like a proper mechanics. The character that I think they're probably gonna add Makoto Nanaya, the Squirrel Girl. Is my guess.
Yep.
And that could be good too. There's not really like an up close like brawler type character.
Yeah, I guess not. Like, yeah, I could see that.
Taukaka's a little bit like that, but not really. So who knows? You said you picked up two games from the Japanese eShop.
So the second one I picked up is Sudokats.
All right.
So it's Sudoku. But with Sudoku. Cats instead of Sudoku, but yeah. With cats instead of numbers.
Okay.
So you've got, now you can toggle on numbers instead, but that kind of takes the fun out of it. So you've got like these nine different clearly different cats that you have to arrange in the same way you would the numbers in a Sudoku puzzle, Seppuku puzzle.
God, that would mess me up. I think I'd be really bad at that. Like, I'm decent at Sudoku, but having cats instead of numbers, I think that would just like mess with my brain, and I wouldn't be able to just like perceive where like the I have duplicates and stuff like that as easily.
Yeah, I will say it certainly it is a little more challenging than if you just have the numbers for me personally, but I did get through every puzzle in the game because unfortunately it does have a very limited number of puzzles. There's only 39 total. Six of them are 4x4 puzzles, 13 are 6x6, and then the remaining 20 are 9x9.
That's very low.
Yeah, especially for how many combinations there are.
Yeah, like, I get that it was, like, a budget game, but, you know, I'm pretty sure there's tools out there that you can very easily make regular Sudokus very easily. Yeah. So, that feels low, but whatever.
And, like, the last thing I want to say about it is, so each of the nine cats are based on actual cats. And as you play, you can unlock their bios.
Oh my god. that's fun, at least. Speaking of puzzles, I did something bad. I bought a Humble Bundle, despite how big my backlog is. I bought
I did the same.
You bought the puzzle game bundle?
Not the puzzle game bundle, okay. But I'll get to it.
All right. I at least have played a game from it at this point. I played a game called Patrick's Parabox. And this game, okay, so this game has at least 200 puzzles in it. I've done about maybe 20, I've done about 50, and already, like, they're starting to really hurt my brain. Like, they're getting really hard and really tough to wrap my head around, because it's a block-pushing puzzle, but where you have to push certain blocks onto certain areas in the level. It's all grid based, and also have your character go to a certain point to end the level. Now where it gets tricky is that you can push boxes into other boxes, and you yourself can move into other boxes. Like, certain boxes will have like edges on them and then like a hollow center, and if you have those on a barrier and you push another box into the like hollow space, it'll go into that hollow space. Then you can walk into that hollow space again if it's, you know, against a barrier, and then it'll like zoom in to that box so that you can move stuff around that box too. So like, there's weird stuff going on where you can, you know, push boxes into other boxes to kind of like transport multiple at a time through like a small barrier to get to where you need to push everything. But the game also features like really difficult things. Like, it features recursion, where you are simultaneously inside of a box and outside of that box at the same time.
What?
This is gonna be really difficult to explain, but basically, like, there'll be a like recursion box in there that might have like an opening at the top and the bottom, and then like you in the outer box can move into an opening at the top and bottom of the stage, and then you'll pop out the top or bottom of that recursion block. So it's, the puzzles are really like really challenging in that way. Like, they're difficult, but they are like nicely challenging, and the game does have a good progression of teaching you the mechanics as you go along. There's like challenge stages in the different worlds that you can play in as well. It's, so far, I don't know how, I'm very much a completionist when it comes to puzzle games. But I don't know how far I'm going to get in this. Because like, at some point, if it's getting this difficult this early, at some point I think that like these are going to be like puzzles that might take me like multiple days per puzzle thinking about
just
to get through.
Thinking about it, yeah.
There's an achievement in the game for creating a paradox. I don't know what that means. So, like,
I like the sound of it, though.
Yeah, like, it's very well done for what it is, and I think that if you are a fan of puzzle games, of, like, positional puzzle games especially, that you'll have a great time with it. But holy crap, man. it's pretty intense.
I just gotta say, anytime someone says recursion, my mind just immediately goes to that edited Winnie the Pooh comic.
Oh, that's one of my favorite ones. Like, as far as I'm concerned, there isn't another meme of that image where the Pooh, watch out, you're eating blank. There's no other version of that meme, even though that is a meme with a bunch of different versions. That's the definitive version.
I've seen other versions, but they don't matter to me.
No.
It's that one.
Yeah.
Sweet Jesus, Pooh, that's not honey. You're eating recursion.
All right. So you purchased a Humble Bundle?
Yes. So I purchased a Humble Bundle of game collections.
Oh, that's recursion right there.
Yeah.
A collection of collections.
I bought the Mega Man Collection Humble Bundle.
Okay.
Because, I mean, for a while, like, some of the games I've been talking about, like, I've been on a bit of a Capcom kick. Like, I always knew about Capcom growing up and everything, but, like, they were kind of a company that I kind of just ignored. And
Capcom's had a really strange history where they used to put out so many games, mm-hmm. and then they, like, start getting in trouble or something like that, closing down studios, and it looked like they were on really shaky ground for a bit.
Until and now they're putting out so many games again.
Yeah, they you know, rebounded with, like, you know,
Monster Hunter World,
a good Resident Evil game. Say what you will about Street Fighter V, but, like, they had Sony's support to make that happen, and now Street Fighter VI, you know, seems to be very well received, yep. as well. So they bounced back in a crazy way.
Oh yeah. But yeah, no, they were always just someone I knew about, but, like, I never really played much of their stuff. And I feel like Capcom, like, even if, like, say, like, Resident Evil or, like, any of the fighting games don't appeal to you, like, I feel like they have something for everyone.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'd say probably the first, like, big Capcom series I kind of went into was Phoenix Wright, was Ace Attorney.
Oh, yeah. I kind of forget that that's a Capcom game, despite him being in Marvel vs. Capcom.
But, yeah, no, a lot of stuff I just ignored, like, getting into, like, fighting games more so now. Like, I've tried out a bunch of older Capcom games, and I've been playing through the Resident Evils, Monster Hunter. Another one I had never touched was Mega Man.
Yeah, actually, I think the first big Capcom franchise you interacted with might have been Dead Rising.
Oh, right.
That's a Capcom game, yeah.
I think that predates...
when you played Ace Attorney, I think.
Yeah.
Well, maybe around the same time, but still.
And actually, so, like, at that same time, like, I also played Devil May Cry 4. Because I had gotten a bundle of games that they had for the 360. I don't know if they had this for the PS3 as well at the time, but it was just a little box set that had Dead Rising 1, Lost Planet Colonies Edition.
Oh, right. Lost Planet, holy shit.
And Devil May Cry 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd picked that up for the 360. Yeah, so that's probably because, like, right around that time, the 360 area is kind of when I started getting into Capcom, like, checking out some Capcom stuff, I guess, with that. Yeah, the other, like, Dead Rising 2, Ace Attorney, Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah.
But that was kind of the start of it. But, like, now I'm checking out some other stuff. Like, I also want to check out Dragon's Dogma 2. I have the first one, Dark Arisen. I haven't played it yet, though. But, like, yeah, I want to check out that, too.
That game's ridiculous. The climbing mechanics in that game are so funny. Climbing on, like, the... Because, like, yeah, like, you've probably seen a bunch of shots of, like, you know, climbing on these, like, big yep. hydras or ogres and stuff like that. Yep. you can climb on like everything. It's ridiculous. Like you can climb on like a boar.
Like I just want to. I've just been really wanting to check out a lot of Capcom stuff, and I feel like they're very quickly moving their way up as one of my favorite developers.
Nice.
But yeah, Mega Man. I picked up the Mega Man collection bundle, so the bundle included Mega Man Legacy Collections 1 and 2, along with Mega Man 11, Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2, and Mega Man 0 ZX Legacy Collection.
That's a lot of Mega Mans.
It did also include a coupon for the Humble Store for 50% off the Battle Network Collection.
Oh, man.
But I figure by the time I get through the rest and get to that, I can probably get for more than 50% off on a sale.
Maybe.
But yeah, so far I've only played through Mega Man 1, which, ooh boy.
Yeah, that game's messed up.
Like, yeah.
Really messed up.
It definitely a product of the time.
Yeah. There's a reason why people talk about Mega Man 2 and 3 and don't talk about Mega Man 1.
I'll admit, so the collection does give you a save state to use, and I used it. I put that save state right before Yellow Devil.
Yep.
I already hated him enough from the stage in Smash.
Yeah, that's the reason we don't play that stage.
Yep. Unless it's on a Battlefield mode. Or
we don't use the Omega Final Destination mode. Final Destination is too boring.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, like, I think the first iteration of a series is definitely allowed to be flawed.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, no, like, I'm looking forward to jumping into the others. And, I mean, each one seems to be a pretty quick game to get through.
Yeah, like, it's the old school mentality of, like, we're gonna make these games hard, so it takes a while. But, if you have, you know, years of gameplay and experience and kind of, you know what the game's about anyways, like, they're a lot easier. Like, as a kid, like, I played a bit of Mega Man 2. I didn't realize that different robot masters were weak to different attacks at the time.
Yeah, so there definitely seems to be a unspoken, well, I mean, obviously, like, you can look online and find the best order to take on the robot masters in, but, like, there's definitely an unspoken order they kind of want you to tackle things in, and you kind of got to figure that out. I'm looking forward to going through some more of those. I did also finish my playthrough of my replay of Yakuza 0.
Yep.
Which, so I did actually get something out of this playthrough. On my initial playthrough of the game, I did Kiryu's Realty side story. Like, I completed that, but I never did Majima's Cabaret Club.
Oh, man.
Side stuff. So I actually got through that this time, and, man, getting through that to unlock Majima's, like, actual fighting style, it's so good.
Yeah. You gotta learn how to run a cabaret club to learn how to stab people with a Tonto. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah. But also one thing I have noticed, there were quite a few story beats in this game that I'd completely forgotten about. And I don't think that's anything to do about them being forgettable. I think it's just because the side stuff is so crazy that it completely overrides the main story in my mind, making the main story more replayable. Yeah, and like, I mean, I've said it before, there's so much wacky side stuff in these games, and, like, honestly, Kiryu kind of has two side modes, the Realty and the Pocket Circuit Racing, because there's a long line of side stories related to that mode that it's almost its own side mode.
Yeah, that's so ridiculous. A slot car minigame. Yeah, sure, that's a key feature of this game about the Yakuza. Oh man, it's a series that I should play more of. I really should. If I play more of, I mean play any of, because I've only ever seen Let's Plays of 0 and 4. So they're just so crazy. Maybe I'll start with Judgment. Maybe that'll be my the way to go about it. So yeah, play the two Judgment games. Who knows?
Yeah, I want to get through these because, like, I've just been hearing so much crazy stuff about Infinite Wealth. I want to get to that.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a while before I get to it. Actually, quickly, there's one thing I want to say about Yakuza. I was talking to a friend about this, and, like, the side stuff, I feel like exists, like, it has, like, that same energy as Japanese commercials.
Oh, man. You know what? You kind of, like, have something there.
I would not at all be surprised if I was playing a Yakuza game and I did a side story where I encountered Long Long Man.
Yeah. Yeah, there's people compile Japanese commercials, and they're fantastic. There's also people that compile Jamaican commercials, which are a different kind of fantastic, because every single commercial is set to music. Mm. Like, they sing the ad at you, like, for almost every commercial. It's fantastic. It's, like, the fact that there's, like, a difference in culture of even advertising is so crazy. But yeah, the only other game I really sunk time into, I've sunk a lot of time into it, is Unicorn Overlord.
Yes, of course.
Yep, I got this thing on release day. At the same time, I bought 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, so I'll hopefully be playing that at some point too.
I picked that up as well. Who knows when I'll get to it.
I've only heard interesting things I'll say about it, so
maybe give me a heads up when you get to it. I'll try to get some time in too.
We'll see. Yeah, try and, you know, have a conversation. The problem is that that's a game that I think that if we want to talk about in length of the podcast, we'd have to do a spoiler cast about it. Like, we have to do something heavy, because, like, it is such a story-based game. Like,
yeah,
from what I hear about it, I don't know if we're gonna have, like, you know, a 15-minute conversation about how the mech battles are or something, like, the tower defense is, because I never hear anybody really talking about that part of the game. So
yeah, it's always probably the story.
Yeah, okay. Which is, you know, in contrast to Unicorn Overlord, which is all about the gameplay, the story is actually really bland, and, like, it's there because it kind of has to be there. Like, the story is basically evil guy betrayed kingdom with dark magic, and through the use of, like, mind control, basically, like, took over the entire world. And then, like, you escape, and then 10 years later, you try to liberate the world from this evil dude as he's trying to summon some sort of dark force. It's very, like, basic stuff. It's pretty much the plot of, like, Fire Emblem or something. Which, this game actually takes a lot of inspiration from Fire Emblem. But the
main, like, thing... I see a lot of those character designs. I kind of think Fire Emblem-ish.
Yeah, like,
in one very particular VanillaWare area.
Yeah, like, a lot of the characters have designs
giant that are... giant melons.
Okay, I was gonna get to that later, but yeah, there's physics in this game. You know, the characters look, you know, like hand drawn kind of stuff, but they're 3D models with the all the physics that can imply. But most of the characters that, you know, don't do that are very much like old Fire Emblem character designs. Because, like, that's actually one thing that I'll give Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem very rarely ever sexualizes characters before Awakening. Like, the only times it did were, like, a couple characters who were, like, dancers or whatever. It's, like, they weren't even that sexualized. They just had, you know, less clothes because that's their class and that's, you know, what that character design, you know, should be to reflect that. So, But the So this game's Ogre Battle, which is wild, because Ogre Battle is a series that went away a long time ago. The last proper Ogre Battle game was for the N64. And now this game, it reminds me more of the one for the Super Nintendo, just based on a few mechanics. It's like two rows of three characters, whereas the N64 one was a 3x3 grid, for example. The N64 one, your facing when you go into combat mattered. So if you were attacked from the side or the back, like, your formation would be all messed up.
Which
that was actually interesting and something that maybe would have been interesting to see here. But I do appreciate that they kept that part of the game simple, because there's so much in this game. You have potentially up to 10 different squads, up to 5 different characters. So it's like, you know, at maximum 50 characters that you can field on in a battle. And there's a bunch of named characters who have a little bit of personality to them. But honestly, not that much. Not a lot of conversations around those characters outside of a few support conversations and the what little you get of them in the missions that you recruit them in. That's, you know, one of the things that it takes from Fire Emblem is that, you know, large cast of characters, but they're not super developed characters. Each character has weapons and armor and accessories they can equip. Each character has different skills that they learn that you can set up in, like, a programmable tactics kind of way, where you can set different priorities and different conditions for these skills to activate. Different weapons will give you additional skills that you're able to use. There's so much, like, deep dive that you can do with customizing your squad that it's overwhelming. And this is the kind of game where if this exact game was released, like, 15 years ago, I would have absolutely loved it. But now, I'm finding that I am not interacting with these systems as much as I could be or have in the past. I guess I'm less patient now or something. But I'm getting to the point where I think I'll have to start interacting with them more. The game has had a strange difficulty curve where it starts off, I'm playing on the hardest difficulty, it starts off kind of difficult, which is par for the course with strategy games, because you just don't have a wealth of options to tackle the situations that you're presented, so you kind of have to use what little you have to make it work. But now I'm getting to the point where the enemy units are all promoted, and promoting your units in this game is pretty big, because it gives them an extra action, an extra two actions actually during battle. And I'm at the point where I haven't promoted a lot of my units, because that costs the same currency that you use to expand your squads. And so far I've expanded my squads as much as I can at the point I'm at. So my characters are a little bit underpowered, so I think I'll have to start trying to, you know, optimize a little bit more, tweak things to get through it. The combat of Ogre Battle. The combat is interesting, because I think that the reason this game was made was due to the popularity of auto battlers and, like, auto chess and stuff like that.
I could see that.
Because those games are all about just, like, you know, putting a formation of units with predetermined, you know, AI or actions, like, you know, say, super auto pests and stuff like that. And that's how this game is, where when you get into a fight, each character has a certain amount of actions that they will take before the fight ends. And whoever has the highest remaining percentage of HP at the end is the winner. Loser gets knocked back and can't do anything for a few seconds. And if they get attacked while in that state, the enemies will get a first strike on them, so they'll do all their actions before you get to use yours. So winning combat is very important. And there's, you know, spots on the map that people are garrisoned in, where if you beat them, they don't go into a waiting period. They don't get knocked back. They don't lose any of their stamina, which is something that's different from Ogre Battle that this game has, where each unit can only have a certain amount of fights before they have to take a long rest, like, you know, 10 seconds or so, which is actually a really long amount of time in this game, as I'll get to in
a bit. I was seeing you play a little bit last night, and yeah, no, that, like, you completed the mission, what, like, 2 minutes game
time?
Like
2.5 minutes.
But you were probably playing the actual mission for close to an hour?
I wouldn't say half an hour, something like that. Yeah, because, like, the game, there's a lot of pausing that goes on as you're determining where your units are supposed to move, what, you know, items you want to use, overworld abilities that you want to use, what units to deploy, move them where. A lot of minutia. Like, whenever combat happens, it pauses, you zoom into the combat, or you can just skip the combat, because it gives you a preview menu of how the combat's going to go, which is very weird, because it takes into like, that's exactly how the combat will go. Despite the fact that there is RNG that determines things like evasion and stuff like that,
it always just pre-calculates the RNG.
Yeah, it pre-calculates the RNG and shows you where that gets a little tricky, because there's like assist attacks, like archers and mages can assist and do like a little first strike on enemies when they get to combat, and that won't show on the preview when you're selecting characters to move to attack a certain enemy, but once you get into the combat, it will show on the preview. And it's funny how it can modify the RNG, because you can choose whether or not you want your units to assist, because if your units assist, they will lose stamina. So I've had situations where combat's going to go like reasonably well for me, and if I turn on the like an archer assist, I lose the combat, because like the archer assist takes up all like the first few RNG rolls, and the next few RNG rolls are not in my favor. So it's really weird how it works. I guess it's good that they did it that way, just because having your units take a lot of damage and be knocked out is like a problem, because then you have to either use items, which you have a limited amount of items you can use in a map, even if you have a huge stockpile of items, you only use up to 10. And like retreating your characters to a fort to like refresh their HP, that takes a decent amount of time to get them back to like full. And there's a time limit on every map, and the enemy's constantly shooting reinforcements at you. So I guess this is like good in a way that you're not going to get into conversation. You're not going to have to like eyeball it yourself and figure out if you're going to win, because losing a combat is actually pretty detrimental to getting through the game. Just like losing an individual combat can kind of break a push. So I guess that's fine. There's
no permadeath in this game, is there?
No units. No permadeath, which is nice, honestly. The combat does follow a little bit rock, paper, scissors-y. I think to its detriment, it's a little bit too much like that, where the characters will have certain classes that they're specialized against, like, you know, a heavy knight with a gigantic shield is going to take barely any physical damage, but will take a ton from range, from magic damage and specifically armor-piercing attacks, to the point where, like, trying to send physical use against them is basically useless, but sending these, like, counter units to them is like one hit kills and stuff like that. I think that I don't like that as much, and it seems to be a trend that is getting more common in strategy games over time. Like the old Ogre Battle for the Super Nintendo, there were only like a little bit of like weaknesses and like resistances in that game, but like it's not like your archer units dealt extra damage to flying units or anything like that, like that common thing. Or there were like units that had like a specific armored trait that made them take like way less physical damage. It was just like all stats basically. And so there's been a lot of cases where I'll have units that will like lose horribly against a unit or completely destroy you without taking damage, and not that many in betweens. Yeah, I think that's to its detriment, but it's not that bad. I understand why it's done. Like, games are designed that way to, you know, especially with a game that has a ton of customization, to really, like, you know, focus the player on making units to deal with certain enemy classes and, like, mixing and matching to do that. Like, that makes sense. I just, it's not the kind of playstyle that I like as much. The game is huge. There's so many missions in the game. There's a lot of, like, little things to do in the overworld.
I got a bit of a glance of the overworld map there last night and, like, zoomed out. There seemed to be a lot of little markings on the map.
Yeah, because there's, like, a ton of towns and forts and stuff like that. And as you go along and liberate the area, there's some very small liberation missions that are maybe, like, 3 to 5 enemies that are just very, very quick. You can do them in, like, 5 minutes, like, your time. I completed one of those missions in 4 seconds game time. And, like, those will usually unlock, like, one village or fort. And then there's side missions, stuff like that, that will be larger maps with multiple of those on the map to, you know, like, go to rescue units and deploy more units from. And then those will liberate, like, multiple villages and forts on the map. So it's not like every single one of those icons was a, like, mission that I played, but a lot of those icons were missions that I played. Like, I'm maybe halfway through if we go by level cap, but I'm maybe a little bit less than halfway through when it comes to just, like, amount, or maybe a little bit more than halfway through in terms of amount of region that I've explored and stuff like that. There's, like, 5 different regions. Each of them seems to have, like, different, you know, character classes that they originate from, different environments and stuff like that. Right now, I can't even go to 2 of the regions. One of them I think I might be able to if I complete a mission that is, like, 5 levels above my level cap, though. My highest level unit right now, and that doesn't seem like a battle that I'm going to win. But, like, the game is, like, it's not non-linear, necessarily. Like, it seems like, well, okay, I guess it is non-linear, because technically, I have unlocked what seems like the final battle already. It's just that it's, you know, enemy level is 40, and my current units are, like, level 19.
Oh, okay, so, yeah. So, like, okay, yeah, I see what you mean now by based on level, you seem to be about halfway, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but, like, when I completed the first area, it opened up 2 other areas, but one of them was clearly, like, meant for you to approach later. But I did do a couple missions in that area before I was done with the, like, easier area, for example. So it's, like, a little bit non-linear, but it's not, like, branching. It doesn't feel like there's, like, hard branching paths or anything like that. You can complete stuff in, you know, different order, but it's not like there's, yeah, multiple paths or anything like that. So far, I'm liking the game a good amount. It feels like there is just something that's slightly not clicking with me. Like, this feels like a game that I should be like raving about, like, one of my favorites ever, just based on everything that it's doing, but
something's not quite right there. You need a little more time to figure it out.
Like, I either need more time for it to click with me, or more time to figure out why it's not clicking with me. Like, this is a game that I'm going to complete, that I'm going to put a ton of hours into, and probably nominate for awards at the end of the year. But in terms of, like, being super passionate about this, something's off. I'm not quite sure what yet, though. I feel like this is going to be the same situation that I had with, like, Triangle Strategy a couple years ago, where at the time something, like, there was something that I didn't like in the case of that game. It just didn't do enough with its premise of the branching paths. And then, like, 6 months later, I'll be like, no, actually, that game was great. So maybe the same thing will happen here. I don't know.
I feel like few games do take enough advantage of the branching paths when they put them in.
Yeah, and I understand why spend a ton of dev time creating content that
people might not even see.
Half or more than half of you, yeah, people won't even see. So I understand. It's just with Triangle Strategy, like, that was its whole driving factor, was these 3, you know, different paths to go on that mostly just, like, kind of diamond into each other until you got to the end branch. So But yeah, Unicorn Overlord, I would recommend it for people who, like, if you have played and liked Ogre Battle in the past, pick this game up, because there literally hasn't been a game like this, as far as I'm concerned, since the freaking N64. I'm curious to see if, like, a new Ogre Battle, branded Ogre Battle game will be released, because, A, that game was supposed to be, like, an 8-part series or something like that. And they only ever made four, possibly.
Still halfway to go.
Because, like, the Tactics Ogre games, like, did fit into the canon. I'm not really sure how all that.
I know there's a Tactics Ogre that recently got a remake released.
Yeah, it's the second time it's been remastered.
It's been re-released. Yeah.
Actually, no, it's the third time, because it was originally a Super Nintendo game, then. It got released for the PS1. There was a PS1 release of it, I'm pretty sure. Then there was the PSP version, and now there's a consoles, Steam's, whatever's version. And I mean, that is one of the most heralded tactical RPGs ever created. I think it's got some flaws, personally, but like it's highly revered, and the fact that it did get released again, and people seem to like the new version of it, as far as I can tell. Maybe that's good things for branded Ogre Battle to come back. Maybe if this game blows up, could see more Ogre Battle in the future. I'd love to see that. It's a good Queen song, Ogre Battle. So, Unicorn Overlord. It is a full price game, though. But at least in this case, it seems like there's so much content, you'll get a lot of hours out of it. So
now, full price or full price?
It's $80 Canadian.
Okay. I'm curious, did you check out the demo at all before it released?
No, I've not done that with any of the games that have done. Like Triangle Strategy did that as well. Octopath, I believe, did that as well. Like, these are games that I knew I was going to buy and play. So I'd rather just commit and play the whole thing at once. Because I'm very much a binge gamer. Like, I'm not, like, playing games every single day. But when I do sit down to play a game, I will play for a very long session. So I don't necessarily want to be interrupted because I ended the demo and then have to wait a week or two for the full game to come out to pick that up, and then I'll have to like kind of relearn it a little bit. Like with this game specifically, that would be terrible because of just how much customization you can do for all your characters.
It is nice seeing demos that allow you to transfer your progress into the main game.
Yeah, it's interesting times we live in, because there was used to be a bunch of demos, and the demos stopped.
And then they start calling them betas in name,
which is a complete misuse of that word.
Yeah,
and how it's traditionally been used, but now demos are back, and
what we see of like games in alpha, that's not what alpha is.
That's ridiculous. That's the worst. When they say like, oh yeah, we're releasing the our open playable alpha. It's like, that's not what that means.
That's not an alpha.
Like, what are you trying to? Are you trying to like? I don't know, I won't say trick people, but just like goad people into playing your game because it feels like you're playing like a super early version of it, kind of like how early access is. I don't know.
That's a beta. If you're like 2 weeks from launch and you're putting out something called a beta, no, that's a demo.
Yeah, that's not a beta.
Like if it's like Street Fighter 6, where like you're like 6 months more out and you're putting out a playable build, that's a beta.
Yeah, sure.
That's a beta. You can call that a beta.
But yeah, like 2 weeks before release, like, what's the length of time that games take before they need to be pressed on disc before and then release?
Yeah.
It's like, anything that's pressed on a disc, that's not a beta. That's a final release. I don't care how much day one patches you put into it. That's your final release. Speaking of our final releases, that's all I had for the games I've played. Have you played anything else?
There's one other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of what I've played. I'm not going to say too much about it, and that's Pal World.
Right, yes.
I put about 10 hours in it, but it's like, I don't really want to put much more than that into it until it's in full release, because it is still just early access.
Right.
So, like, I don't really want to form an opinion on it till it's gone to that 1.0. But, like, as it is right now, like, yeah, it's a survival game. Like, I mean, I used to enjoy survival games a lot, but, like, not as much anymore. I was kind of hoping the whole Pokemon-esque aspect of it was, like, would pull me in a little more, but it's, like, there's no actual, like, Pokemon battles or PAL battles. They're more so just fighting alongside you.
Yeah.
While you shoot stuff. Yeah. You can give some of them guns. You can give certain PALs guns before you even get guns.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's just... I'll give it more time once it hits full release, whenever that is. But for now, I don't want to put too much time in it and get burnt out on something that, I don't know, ultimately I might not really enjoy, but, like, I want to see that 1.0 to form my opinion.
Yeah, I think we're in the same boat about that with a lot of early access stuff, where we want to wait for 1.0 to really,
yeah,
you know, commit to it. I had
to check it out a little bit, though, at least.
Yeah. yeah, the only opinion I have on PAL World is a legally actionable one. Like, I saw a list of all the PAL World ones, some of my on YouTube. Mr. One-Ups, who's actually a really hilarious YouTuber who does a lot of Pokemon lists, ranked every single PAL from PAL World.
Mm.
And oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, okay, when people were talking plagiarism, I was like, okay, when you're building, like, a creature collecting game where you have to have 100 some odd creatures, it's hard to be original, and some of them, like, for example, the sheep one, for example, like, saying that that's plagiarizing Pokemon is simply not true. That's plagiarizing sheep. That's a creature that exists. How much could you do with a sheep? They're a big ball of wool with a dopey face on it. Like, you can't do that much with it. So that, like, I don't consider that plagiarism. I did see a few Twitter threads comparing 3D models, however.
Yes.
That's where the plagiarism comes in.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like they were... it doesn't look like they just straight up took it, but rather more so used it,
like,
used it as a guide.
Yeah, there's some that are, like, very close. Like
the
vertex
one that
kind of
looks like Lycanroc. Like, I think that's one that's very close. And
there's one serpent looking thing that straight up has Primarina's hair.
Yeah. And there's one that's, like, I think it's called Anubis, but it looks like Lucario.
Whatever. That's Egypt. Egypt is. Yeah. Government of Egypt, go after Nintendo.
But,
and Power World.
People were making so much noise about this that the Pokemon Company even had to put out a statement to get people to stop, like, messaging them about this game.
Oh, yeah.
Just them saying, we're looking into it ourselves.
Okay.
Whether there's legal action to be taken, and there's been nothing yet. So, that's Pokemon Company, that's Nintendo. Like, if there was something, I feel like the lawyers would be on it already and we'd know.
Yeah. Yeah, like, some of those 3D model comparisons, I think maybe they're close enough that could actually be asset theft. Like, that could actually be theft of intellectual property. But as far as the designs go, there's, like, only, like, two or something that I think are actually, like, you know, I could see as plagiarism. There's the grass Cinderace. That's just Cinderace except green.
Yep.
And then there was one other that I'm forgetting at this moment. But, like, yeah, a lot of them are just like, okay, you know, it looks like some sort of dog. Like even, like, the Lycanroc ripoff. Like, okay, Lycanroc already just looks like a kind of a basic wolf anyways.
Yeah.
that's basically not plagiarism. Yeah. That's a wolf. Like, I'm sure if you looked at Digimon or... Well, okay, Digimon would be so over-designed you wouldn't be able to tell that it was a wolf. But, you know, you know what I'm saying. Like...
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's it for what I played. But there's one little thing I want to talk about. Something that I've noticed. A key feature that Windows is actually lacking.
Oh, yeah?
So... The only way, so if you're using an Xbox controller with Windows, and I'm using it wirelessly with the adapter,
mm-hmm.
the only way to check the battery life is to open the Xbox accessories app and actually check. Windows has no kind of notification or anything for when your battery gets low.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, I was like finishing up the season of Fortnite, and I'm just grinding out some Battle Pass levels, which it's nice how little you can actually play in a season of Fortnite and actually make good progress on those Battle Passes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just did a lot of grinding at the end, and I didn't play very much in the middle. But I was playing the Rocket Racing mode. And my controller died about halfway through the first lap of a race. And I'm going through ranked. So it's like, oh, well, I'm basically out of this race.
Yeah.
So, cause I'm just like, well, where are my backup double A's? Where are my two charged ones to swap in? Just throw those in. Took about 30 seconds and I'm back in. It's like, okay, well, maybe I can catch up with the back of the pack and at least not come in last. Somehow I did actually come in first.
Oh man, what does this game have, like Mario Kart items or something?
No,
just wow. Okay.
I don't know how. I just managed to, like, I caught up with the bot like about a about halfway through the last lap. I'm like, oh, I see the 11th place car. I can maybe not get last, and then like not long after that, it's like, oh, there's the rest of the pack, and then I managed to get first somehow. Wow. And like this was at a point in ranked where like. Everyone kind of knows what they're doing. It was like, I think I was in platinum 3 or something like that. But yeah, that kind of got me thinking there really is no, Windows really does not let you know when your controller battery is low.
Yeah, but which is weird because that information does exist. Like you said, you can check the Xbox accessories app. When I am using my PS4 controller, not on Steam, I have to run a program to like mess with drivers, and that also tells me the battery life in that. So the information is there, but yeah, the fact that it's not as easily accessible as it probably should be is a bit strange. Maybe that's a Windows 11 feature, who knows.
So I did a little bit of searching to see if there was like a notification or something I could enable, and I found a program on GitHub.
Oh boy.
That basically just adds a little icon to your taskbar to show you where the battery level's at when it's connected. And I haven't had the battery get low yet, so I haven't like seen how like it notifies me when it gets low. But like you can set a custom sound for it.
Oh boy.
Like when you like go to set the sound, it just takes you to the Windows folder with like all the Windows sounds, and it's like, oh, you can choose one of these. No. I went with like a while ago. I made an audio clip, for purposes, and so my when my battery gets low, hopefully it'll go off, and I'll just get the Simpsons silent alarm activated.
Oh my god! Wow.
But yeah, no, it's weird that it's something that Windows lacks, and you don't know till your controller dies if you're just using it wirelessly and not wired.
Yeah, any kind of Bluetooth thing. Like, I have a Bluetooth speaker that I will occasionally hook up to my PC, because I don't actually have computer speakers. I either...
Yeah, neither do I.
Either well, put through my TV or use my Bluetooth speaker.
But... I do have the capability of pumping it out through my surround system, if I want to. But yeah, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the... Near Orchestra concert.
Right. Yes.
And that was a fantastic show. Throughout the whole thing, they've got like a... So like, as they go through, it's actually telling a story after the events of Automata. Like it's telling a story with of 2B and 9S afterwards. So there's like a big display, and like all during the songs they have like a bunch of visuals coming on, and of course at one point you've just got bullet hell on the screen.
Yeah.
There were so many 2B cosplayers there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lineup for merch that went up three stories.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
So I was seated first row of the balcony. So during the intermission, I was able to get out quick and get into line for the merch, and I managed to get merch and get back just in time. In fact, I even had, because they once it started back up, they only let people back in between songs. Yeah, so I lined up. I got some merch during the intermission. I got the shirt and I got a music box. And I get back. I get to my seat. I look at the shirt. They gave me the wrong size.
Oh.
So I run back. I'm like, hey, you gave me the wrong size. They gave me the right size. And I'm back in my seat just in time for the intermission to end.
Yeah, it's always tough getting merch at concerts because I remember... when we went to see Rush, we decided to get the like merch before the concert started, but there was obviously a line, and we like finished up our transaction just as they started playing. I was like, oh shit, damn it. We had to run to our seats. It's like, I didn't want to miss a second of that concert. But at the same time, if you wait too long, they might be out of merch. So. Yeah.
Of course, I'm going to have to make sure when I go to Miku Expo, I'm going to have to make sure I get down there nice and early. Cause I gotta get one of the glow sticks.
Oh God! Yep.
Gotta have it. that was a really good show. I've found I have a real liking for like live orchestra music.
Nice. Yeah, I really want to see Distant Worlds, the Final Fantasy orchestra concert.
Mm.
They were here a couple years ago, and just. I didn't even know, which is frustrating. But
I'm kicking myself over not going to the Zelda Symphony when they were here a while back.
Oh man, damn it! that would have been good to see. Yeah, all right. Got to send out some email notifications.
Yeah,
because like it's not like Spotify's gonna tell me that. It's not like Ticketmaster's gonna tell me that. Like I have to like actually subscribe to those places' newsletters.
Yeah, I feel like the last time like the Zelda Orchestra was here was like somewhere in the 5 to 10 year ago range. Like it's been a while, but that would have been nice to see.
Yeah. I think we can close out here. I just had one piece of news that I did want to bring up briefly.
Oh yeah.
Because it relates to the game of our year for 2023. If you haven't listened to those podcasts, go listen to them now, because I'm about to tell you what it is, obviously. It's about Control and how Remedy acquired the rights to Control from 505. Yep. So that's pretty interesting. That's pretty telling. I know when we were talking about it, I think Alex said something to the effect that he wasn't really sure if we were going to see more I can't really say the Control universe because it's like the greater Remedy universe at this point.
Yeah.
But like more like from Control specifically in the greater Remedy verse. But now that they've acquired the full IP rights, that's pretty telling that there's a very good chance now that we will see more Control in the future.
I wonder if they'll be able to acquire the... why can't I remember the name of it? The Quantum Break... rights from Microsoft. I wonder if that's something they'll be able to do.
I don't know.
I don't think Microsoft's doing anything with it.
Maybe not. Like Bungie got away from Microsoft, which seemed impossible at the time, and they got acquired and then went independent again.
And now they're, well, I guess they're still independent, but funding from Sony.
Yeah.
At least until until they don't make enough money during a year, that and then Sony has the right to just step in and take control.
Yeah, contracts are dumb. So yeah, I'm good to hear that. Control has been so far, it's a game that I really liked, and it's the only game that I've been interested in when it comes to the Remedyverse. So like, Remedy, they do make good games, but like, I wasn't interested in Quantum Break. I'm not interested at all in Alan Wake. Don't really care that much about Max Payne, but Control, grabbed me with something I was interested in. So at least for me, that's great news. So I can, interact with their brand of storytelling and game design in the future.
Now, where does Death Rally fall into the Remedyverse?
I don't know, man. Listen, if you go far enough back, you can find some really weird games that developers have made.
Like, oh yeah.
Like, have you heard of a game called Rock and Roll Racing?
I feel like I have.
It's like a game like RC Pro-Am or Championship Sprint or anything like that. Like the isometric, like rally, not rally racing, but just like racing around a track thing. But yeah, it had like midified versions of a bunch of different rock songs in it. it's licensed music, but not really. And that was a Blizzard Entertainment game. You wouldn't think of Blizzard releasing a racing game for the Super Nintendo. Very strange stuff there.
Everyone gets their start somewhere.
Yeah, and Cookies and Cream, the like pseudo co-op puzzle cutesy adventure game from Software. So yeah, that'd be kind of an interesting list to try and make, just like the top 10 strangest games from established publishers and developers. There's definitely some weird ones on that list. But yeah, so that's about it for us. If you want to get in contact with us, you can always email us at threelevelsdeep@outlook.com. Leave a comment on the YouTube version of this podcast or any other videos that we put out. Except the Fire Emblem video. I'm not looking at the comments in that video anymore. turns out I have anxiety. that was just like, no, I don't need to be looking at a bunch of negativity right now.
People can sure get heated up over opinions.
Over opinions on a game that came out, 15, 20 years ago, that's purely single player. So an objective ranking isn't really relevant at all because there's no competitive scene on it, so
I was surprised we didn't see any like kind of negativity like that on our Pokemon Starter Evolution lines tier list.
Yeah, like a couple people were like, oh yeah, Blaziken should be higher, and it's like, okay, well yeah, sorry, Blaziken has to carry the dead weight of Combusken.
Yep. And but it's like
people were not like, ad hominem attacks on us, yeah, for our opinions on that one, like the Fire Emblem.
But I mean, when you see how like heated the Pokemon fandom can get at times, like I'm surprised we didn't get anything like that on that video.
Yeah. All right. So that'll do it for this episode of the podcast. Have a good. I've got nothing for an outro.
It's almost Easter. Happy Easter.
Sure, why not? Just like a certain person will rise again. What? Okay, bye.